What's up, sports fans? Welcome to Sports Odds and Ends, the show for the fly-by-night sports fan. I am King Cash, joined by my good friend and co-host, the one, the great JVZ.
It's been a long week. it's I think for everybody, but it's I don't know, kind of cathartic for a lot of people at the end here. So it was election week, and I know we're a sports podcast, but we don't necessarily stick to sports, especially since a lot of what we talk about has a lot of overlap with what happens during elections and politics and other things in general. So I think we can get right into that part. We had three states that legalized sports betting. So if you remember way back, I think a couple of years ago, the U.S. Supreme Court struck down the law that that banned sports betting nationwide, except for like pockets of places like Vegas. So since then, every state has had like a hodgepodge. Every state has handled sports betting differently. So now three additional states, Maryland, Louisiana, and South Dakota, have joined the 22 other states and DC in allowing sports betting. So we're basically at half the country right now that has some sort of law on the books.
And especially for Maryland, because I'm not sure about Louisiana and South Dakota, but I know Maryland also a couple years ago changed their gaming regulations, because now Maryland has casinos, which was a newer thing for them as well. So I'm pretty sure that has something to do with the overturn of this, is they want more business for the casinos, obviously. And one of the big businesses in casinos, other than games, is betting and sports betting.
Yeah. Now, I think at some point we're going to see some sort of nationwide law step in to supersede all of these, just because I think for sports leagues, they're going to want a cut of the action, especially now that other revenues are down. They're looking for any revenue stream they can find, and I think betting is going to be a big part of that if they can somehow get that handled on a nationwide basis. But also, they want a good set of rules so that they can design how they ensure that their own sports are being so that they can ensure integrity in their own sports and make sure that no players are betting, or nobody associated with the league at all is betting on games, especially referees, which there's been scandals for the NBA in the past about that. Just add three more states to the list. I think I'm still waiting for California to get its act together, but around here, gambling is kind of the domain of Native American tribal lands. So it's a little bit tricky if the state wants to get involved in that. But we'll just have to wait and see. Meanwhile, I think we had talked previously about WNBA owner, Atlanta Dream minority owner Kelly Loeffler, and her Senate race. She was the incumbent, and Raphael Warnock and several other candidates were challenging for that seat. Those two are now going into a runoff that will be settled in January, because neither of them managed to get a majority of the vote. Two races in Georgia that are going to go to runoffs for Senate seats. And this is one where WNBA players have actively campaigned against her. That's another wait and see for a couple months. And it's going to be after the hectic several months that we've had with the election so far. It's not going to end in Georgia.
No, it's going to be kind of a big process. There's still like a lot of stuff going on this is one of those ones where I'm kind of very surprised how much people are paying attention to politics as a whole. I thought this was going to be one of those things that for most people stopped at the presidential election, but like, I love how much how much knowledge is being shared on like the effect of local politics, which you know I scream from the mountaintops about. Pay way more attention to your local politics than you do the big scheme politics, because those change things for you a lot faster than you think they do. So having the WNBA rally around other opponents of Kelly Loeffler is a big thing, and which has affected it so far, but it's a continued process.
Yeah, there's at least since the election day, there's been a lot of attention paid to Black women, especially Black women in Georgia, who've definitely helped turn out the vote there, and and so I think it kind of aligns with what we've said all along about the WNBA. They've been the leaders among all sports when it comes to activism. Like I said, all this is interconnected. You can't really talk about sports without talking about the politics as well. And I think, it struck me while looking at like the election results coming in, at least the presidential election results, and it's like all these states that are still counting votes. A lot of them were, or at least all the precincts that were still counting votes. After election day, like on day two and day three, I think several of those were in places where arenas had been set up for voting centers, like in the middle of the city, in the downtown areas, and those big city areas were places that with the whole point being to drive more turnout in some of those areas. And just because those are traditionally in Black or other minority communities where polls sometimes get shut down. They opened up those places and turnout hit massive records to the point where they were still counting votes the next day. And on top of that, just all the stuff with early voting and absentee ballots and all that. But, some of these arenas have been open for weeks to allow for early voting, especially the one in Georgia. And I think it's very clear from how the election played out that mattered a lot. I think, all these efforts, both from, LeBron's efforts to drive out turnout and More Than a Vote and all that, and then all the NBA team efforts to coordinate using their arenas for polling places and other voting centers. I think, all of that had a huge effect on this election and may have actually, may have helped determine the winner of this election. So, now that, I hope to see this continue in further elections, because, athletes have a big voice. Just logistically, teams can have a huge effect on this election and have a huge effect on turnout if they make their places available. I think 23 teams had turned their facilities into either polling places or places to count votes. Even Trae Young got involved. I shouldn't say even, because he's always getting involved in the Atlanta community, but he's out there buying lunch for people counting votes on Friday. So
I think him, some other teams and other individuals did the same as well in their areas. It's been like a big process, but I'm not super confident we'll see such a big effort. I think there will be definitely people who kind of continue this effort, but it tends to be one of these things. It only comes when like people really, really, really want to see a change, I think other than the athletes who are kind of consistently involved, and there are some of them who are very consistently involved in these processes and kind of continue to be. And a lot of times some in the background, they don't make it their forefront effort, but they definitely show an interest in these things. But I think the last time the athlete entertainer turnout to me was this big was like during the Obama run for election, like the first time around. So it's always one of those things. I would love to see it continue. I would love to see people kind of put these efforts into these things more consistently, because like you said, they do have a big voice, they do have a lot of sway in at least getting people to do things. So I would just kind of, I don't know, I would love to see them do it more.
Yeah, and you mentioned that, you know, local politics is more important. So, like, I hope there's an emphasis on this, like, on the off, you know, even, like, the midterm years and then the other 2 years in between presidential elections, just because there's a, you know, that's when all the local stuff happens.
Yeah.
And then, like, the primaries that happen in the spring as well. And so that's...
Because I think I read this is, like, going to be one of those political seasons where a lot of seats in the congressional grounds are up for re-election or some type of election in the coming year. So it's one of those things, like, if you really want to see change, this is where you have to not only, you know, make the big votes for presidents and mayors and governors, but you're going to have to go out again in a year or 2 years to, you know, make Senate changes and, you know, seats in the House changes and things like that. So it doesn't stop here for those that want to really see that sea of change, because this ain't it.
Yeah, we're not quite there yet.
No.
I don't know if we'll ever be quote-unquote there. It's just a matter of always trying to push forward and making things better tomorrow than they were today and better today than they were yesterday. So we only get a few chances to do that throughout the year and to actually make your voice heard. So it's, you know, so it's important to take that opportunity when you can. You know, because otherwise they'll just pretend like you're not paying attention and do whatever. And, you know, sports betting is one place where I think there's a huge effect on between politics and sports. There's also, I mean, in general, there's like civic pride, but that's more of a local thing. I think you know, marijuana has a, you know, that's sort of on the cusp because you see a lot of athletes that are, you know, hooked on painkillers, you know, especially in the NFL. And so if, you know, marijuana policy, you know, surrounding, I mean, it's still legal nationwide. So, you know, even though there's a lot of states that have legalized it for medical purposes or legalized it for recreational purposes, but nationwide, until marijuana is legal, I don't think any sports league is going to put out regulations explicitly endorsing it. Although several leagues have come out and said that they're going to they're not going to test for it, or you know, or if they're not going to make it like punitive penalties if they test for it, like they'll focus on rehab if somebody gets caught, things like that. So I mean, as the national conversation shifts politically on that, so does the conversation administratively around the rest of the leagues and how they choose to handle that, and that has a huge impact on athlete welfare. So like I said, sports doesn't stick to sports, so neither will we. So
I mean, one of our big things we talk about on the show on a consistent basis is money and where it goes. So like it's a big proponent of it, right? Like I a lot of I think we kind of mentioned it coming up, but a lot of teams and a lot of organizations in sports donate a lot of money to political campaigns and political things because it helps them to know who is on their side when they want to build an arena, when they want to like buy property in a city, and
when they want to maybe swindle a bunch of minor league baseball players out of their salaries.
Yeah.
And get them to work overtime without having to pay them more. That's,
yeah. So, you know. So those things affect the sports you watch as much as anything else. So that's why athletes and teams and organizations doing these things, you really should pay attention to what these teams spend their money on, what campaigns they donate to, what things they're pushing for. Because a lot of cities have been fucked over by teams taking a lot of money out of the city that would go to other things in the city and then up and leaving, or holding cities hostage. So those are like really big proponents of things. If you are a sports fan and if you have kind of come around to paying attention to the things that are happening this political season, to keep in mind, politics does affect the sports you love to watch. And not always just, you know, in these negative connotations, but it can affect them positively. It can affect them negatively, but it's just something you should pay attention to, what your teams do with politics and what politics do with your teams.
Yeah. The owners aren't sticking to sports either. And if you actually want, suggested reading, there's an ESPN article that we'll put in the show notes about the political donation history of wealthy sports owners. They did a deep dive with 538 on that, and I mean they've got like a full list out there of like, you know, owners, and
I think there was a pretty awesome chart. I think it was on ESPN, and it was just a chart of sports, like sports leagues, either like NHL, MLB, NBA, things like that, and then a breakdown of by team, and then team, and I think donation amount, and then party in which they donated to. And a lot of teams, what they do, which is a really fun thing, is they will donate to both, but they won't always tell you they donated to both, right? Like teams who are in very, very blue states will donate really like insignificant amounts of money to like Democratic parties because they're in a blue state and they understand that the fans of that state are a majority, you know, probably of that party. So those are the ones they put at the forefront. They'd be like, hey, we gave money to X amount of people, but then they'll give millions to the other parties that they don't tell you.
The owners will do something a little bit different than what the teams do. So this is a breakdown of what the owners do, and I think, you know, given the fact that most team owners are billionaires, I think you can kind of guess how this skews a little bit. But like the WNBA chart on here is interesting because it's like different than all the others, although it's starting to look like all the others, but also you have to keep in mind that Kelly Loeffler is an owner, and she's like, she's a huge chunk of donations to Republican candidates. So, you know, being one herself. So it's a couple interesting charts, but also, you know, some interesting tables that break down like who donates to what, and you can kind of sort these and dig through the data if you want. This is, I think, tracking everything since 2016. So
It's really good. It's really interesting. Definitely worth like checking it out and reading it over if you're not burnt out on the politics thing just yet, and you kind of still want to learn more and understand more. This is definitely one of those things worth checking out, I think. So it's going to be in the show notes. Definitely required reading, I would say, for a sports fan who has kind of been, you know, enamored by this political uptake that people have been on. So if you're one of those people, good reading.
This is where your game dollars go to. Half that money goes to the owners. And then they do stuff with it.
All right, let's talk about some other random things that are on the show, Doc, for this weekend. A little bit of English Premier news going on. Southampton is the leader in the English Premier after 8 matches so far. But you said that's going to probably change by the end of Sunday.
Yeah, I actually should have checked that this morning. up until Leicester City is now on top, Southampton has fallen all the way to 4th. Mm-hmm. After several other teams have managed to play 8 matches, just like Southampton did. I think I haven't been paying too close attention to the start of the season, but I just knew that like things were a little bit chaotic with a lot of the top teams falling a little bit further down, like Manchester United's in 14th and Arsenal's in 8th and Chelsea's down in 5th and even Liverpool, they're stuck in 3rd right now, but it's very early on in the season and they're not actually that far behind. Manchester City's down in the 11th, so it's, I think, small sample size, of course, but this got a little bit of traction because Southampton tweeted out stop the count. once they were at the top of the table, even foreign teams are taunting our president right now, so it's they're not sticking to sports either. Fun little run for Southampton. We'll see whether they can sustain this for the season, because this has kind of given me flashbacks to when Leicester City won the Premier League a couple years ago, and it's like, at some point it doesn't become a surprise anymore. Like 8 games at the start of the season, it's still a surprise, and you can still, if anything, the Premier League, because there's no playoffs to decide the who wins the title for the season. They have tournaments for different reasons, but as far as the Premier League champion, that is whoever can stay consistent over 38 matches. Played against every other team in the league twice, so you have to be consistent. You got to be consistent all year for a long time, and 30 more matches for Southampton to prove that they deserve to be near the top.
Yeah, it's I don't know. It's kind of weird because there are just a lot of teams near the bottom half of that chart that in my time of paying attention to English football, like I never thought I would see these teams near the bottom half of the chart. So like, it's been interesting to see the shift that's happening.
Yeah. All right. One football to another. The New York Jets. They've had quite a season. But now their players have filed a complaint about cameras in their locker room, which I didn't think was a thing that was allowed, but apparently the players didn't think so either, and it was something that caught them by surprise when they found them, so they're filing a complaint through the NFL Players Association. At least I think the Jets say that they're being used for security purposes only. So like if a player thinks that, somebody stole something from their locker, then I guess security can investigate that. Mm-hmm. And the Jets claim that they haven't violated the collective bargaining agreement in terms of all this, because all this is defined in the collective bargaining agreement about what can and can't be done to monitor the players. Maybe this is something allowed, but it's kind of sketchy that the players were not informed of this. I think sometimes it's like okay to monitor people if you tell them they're being monitored. Mm-hmm. This might not be unique to the Jets either, because
I doubt that it is, because I think we've seen instances of of this in other sports too, in certain arenas. So it's one of those things where it's like you go, yeah, I could see how you could make the safety protocol thing, you know, to just, you know, you have to err on the side of caution, because if something happens, you can make a case for why you had it as opposed to why you didn't. But it's also one of those things where, like, is there a better route that you could have went about it? And obviously, like, if you don't tell people, it seems like you're trying to be more sneaky than not. Because then it seems like you're spying more than it is a safety thing. So it's, yeah. It walks a really, 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 really gray line. But yeah, no, I think the Jets players are going about it the right way. When you don't know something about this, I think you go a very official route rather than just, you know, like maybe yelling out about it to the media and things like that. I think you just kind of go the official route and let it be done.
Yeah.
Let it be handled.
Yeah, like you said, it's both creepy, it's one thing, like, if this was like a cheerleader locker room, like, we would also feel differently about that too. I think, you know, it's definitely creepy, but also, you know, if there's cameras in this locker room, where else are there cameras? Like, are there cameras in the opponent's locker rooms? Are teams using these, you know, cameras in the opponent's locker rooms to spy on opponents? It's, you know, there's competitive questions as well. And on top of the questions about privacy, although if the Jets are spying on their opponents, it's not working. So I think we can safely say they're not doing that. But yeah, at the very least, if it's not what was agreed to between the players and the owners in the collective bargaining agreement, then they got to rectify that somehow. Part of what was agreed to between the players and the owners this year were COVID-19 protocols, and apparently the Raiders are really struggling when it comes to following those.
I don't even understand how this happened. So, everybody's given guidelines on what to do with the safety protocols, what to do when you have a player who has it, all this stuff. For some reason, the Raiders can stick to none of that, so much so that they have been fined multiple times, I think.
$1.185 million in total. We can go through the list, but...
And now, at this point, the John Gruden has been fined, the organization has been fined, and they've had all of their draft picks taken away.
No, not all, just their sixth round draft pick.
I thought it was all from this year. Is that the only one they had this year?
I'm pretty sure it wasn't.
Okay.
But yeah, I think all would be pretty stiff. But I think if they continue, then I think they're just going to keep taking more draft picks away. But
yeah,
I think taking draft picks away is like, you know, in any sport, that's like a step that the league doesn't want to go to. Where they act like you can hurt a team financially and they'll probably be fine because they're rich and they get tons of money. But if you hurt a team by taking away draft picks, that hurts them competitively. And so you have to do something really bad to get draft picks taken away. You have to do something that damages the integrity of the sport. If you're doing something wrong administratively, like what the Raiders are doing here, you have to do it a lot of times before the league says, all right, you're obviously not paying attention to our small penalties and we got to give you bigger ones. So that's pretty much what's happened here. They've previously been fined $250,000, John Gruden himself was $100,000, for not wearing a mask properly in week two, for John Gruden not wearing a mask properly. That same game, they allowed a non-credentialed employee into the locker room, so that was a $50,000 fine. At one point, Darren Waller and nine teammates had conducted a charity event, and you know, they didn't wear masks and mingled with the crowd, so that was a $30,000 fine for Waller, and $15,000 each for the nine teammates that joined him. They've had players get COVID. Trent Brown was one of them, and then he, during his recovery, he had an IV mishap before one of the last most recent games and had further complications. So I think he's back on the COVID list. The Raiders are going to come out and tell you that they think they're doing everything right, and that these are, that they're being picked on, and that these are draconian fines. But and other teams have struggled a bit as well. But I think for the most part, teams are at least making a good faith effort to follow these rules. And it just seems like the Raiders are the only ones that are just really struggling with them. And just not really a good look for them.
No. It's like, I don't know. Things like this make kind of the whole thing look bad. And by the whole thing, I mean the NFL, right? When you do these things, these are the things we've talked about in the past where you're like, these fines might not be enough at this point. Like the amount of dollar on these fines might not be enough, because obviously you find them multiple times and they've continued to do it, where you've had to now get to the point where you think you're taking away something that actually holds value more than dollars, which is draft picks.
Yeah.
So that either to me means the dollar amount of the fines needs to be higher, especially for an organization, for a team. Maybe not more so for individuals, but we've had talks about those on individuals, and I just think the dollar amount of fines on teams, especially in a situation like this, where you could literally jeopardize the entire season for everyone, needs to be stringent enough to make people follow the rules better. Because and that maybe, is what is a, that's a possibility. They ruin the season for literally everyone.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we're starting to learn over time, as we've seen baseball deal with their various outbreaks, and the NFL deal with various outbreaks, that these leagues are a bit resilient. I guess they're going to have to be, because the virus isn't going away anytime soon. We're going to talk about it later in the show, but the NFL is just going to, or the NBA is going to power through and just conduct a season. No matter what, they'll find a way to continue the season. I don't think anything at this point actually jeopardizes the season. If there's an outbreak that affects every team, then maybe they'll just stop games for a couple weeks and let everybody recover and then come back. They've already had to deal with, or at least baseball has already had to deal with delays. The NFL hasn't quite had to do that yet, but they've had to deal with like small delays between, individual games. It's not like, Raymond James Stadium in Tampa where the Super Bowl is happening. It's not like if the NFL asks them to, hold the game a month later than they're doing now, it's not like they're going to say no, because it's the goddamn Super Bowl and this is the goddamn NFL. So, I think at this point, nothing jeopardizes everything, but at the very least, you are jeopardizing the health of everybody you're jeopardizing the health of teammates, you're jeopardizing the health of your opponents, and, and that can affect competition. So, affecting competition affects money. So that's basically the incentives here. Everybody needs to follow the rules, and everybody agreed on the rules. So the Raiders need to get their act together. All right. The thing is, once the season is over, it seems like all the rules go out the window. And I'm talking about this Justin Turner thing with MLB and the World Series. They basically just decided that Justin Turner is not going to get punished for coming back onto the field and celebrating with teammates after he tested positive for COVID. Five members of the Dodgers since then, they haven't identified who or whether they're players or staffers or what, have tested positive since then. Mm-hmm. It's been about 2 weeks since then. For privacy reasons, they don't want to disclose whether those people were infected by Turner or not. We'd be jumping to conclusions to make that assumption. But I think one thing they do know is that Turner wasn't necessarily the person who brought COVID into the bubble. There's right now a lot of anger directed towards Justin Turner for his behavior, and he's since apologized for that. But I think some people want to make it very clear that in some ways he was a victim of circumstance. Obviously, he's a grown man and he can make his own decisions, and he made a bad one when he decided to come out onto the field and celebrate, but he was also being pressured by his teammates to do so. And I think he was also told that by some MLB employees that he was that other people had tested positive, but he was the only one that wasn't allowed back on the field. So I think I don't know, some weird emotions that came out of that. But yeah, I think now it's a matter of trying to figure out how the bubble was breached in the first place. And, if there's somebody that deserves blame, it's probably the person that brought COVID into the bubble and not necessarily a person who caught it from that person. Although part of the reason why we have all these rules is that you don't know where you can get it. You don't know who you can spread it to. So I think that's, that's why we follow all these rules. That's why we wear masks. That's why we put up with all these things. So it's, and Justin Turner himself was one of those people that was very vocal about doing that and following the rules. So it would have been nice if he followed his own rules when push came to shove for him. But
yeah. And so the more we learn about this situation, the more it kind of rolls back to just what we just said with the NFL and what we said about the Major League Baseball before, right? It's you put rules in place, but then you don't actually enforce them, and you don't make it stringent enough for people to actually care. So you have this situation where there's a lot of misinformation that is happening and a lot of other contextual things that are happening, and because you want to let people because you want to let people celebrate, you're like, oh well, you know what, you know, it's like somebody makes some weird decision on like this is a once in a lifetime thing, kind of, you know, like, and it's just bad. It's just bad for business to do that kind of thing, and the misinformation of or correct information of there are other people who also have it, but making that, singling that person out or whatever the situation, it's just bad information. It's just bad, whether it's true or not. That's bad. I don't know, man. It makes everyone not involved look at not only Justin Turner, but the MLB in a really bad light right now.
Yeah.
To be like, you know what? Kind of almost boys will be boys like situation. Like, no, this is not a, you can't just sweep this under the rug.
Yeah, and it very much looks like the timing of it makes it look like they completed the season, they got their money. Who the fuck cares what happens next? And, you know, we got our money, we're out. And, you know, and I guess I'm not under any illusions that this is all about money, and that teams are losing money left and right. And so they got to get whatever money they can. You know, and the same is going to be true for the NFL. So it's, you know, they're going to get their money, and they don't actually really care that much about safety. Just they care about safety in, you know, to the extent that it affects the money, and no more than that. So it's, well, I guess, yeah, we'll have to wait and see for what happens with baseball.
Yeah, which will just be nothing. It's just going to keep churning until it dies.
Yeah. And, yeah, and all eyes on the NBA for how they conduct this season. They obviously had a very successful bubble, but, you know, now that they won't have a bubble, then, you know, how bad is it going to get?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so some more administrative news for baseball. Too bad DJM couldn't be here to talk about this, but he had called us a couple weeks ago about wanting AJ Hinch to coach the Tigers. Hinch was unceremoniously let go by the Astros and took a big part of the blame for the cheating scandal. Basically, none of the Astros players got punished, but Hinch was the manager at the time, so... So this happened under his watch, and so he got punished for that. Basically, anybody who was a manager at the time got punished. So Alex Cora, mm-hmm. from the Red Sox also stepped away for a season, but he's been rehired by the Red Sox. So that was more of just like a one season suspension more than anything else, until the fallout went away. And AJ Hinch, DJM was very adamant about the Tigers hiring AJ Hinch just because the Tigers are kind of in the same position with their team development, with their player development, as the Astros were maybe 5 years ago. They've got a lot of young players. They've stockpiled through the draft for several years. So having a manager like AJ Hinch that has experience with getting those young players to turn into, into better players, and getting some of them to turn into stars, and getting good baseball results out of that, I think his track record shows that he's been able to do that. So maybe he can do that for the Tigers as well. I think we're starting to see this Astro scandal drift away, I'm not entirely happy about that, although I think I don't mind so much the managers getting to come back because they were actually punished. I just don't want everybody to forget the players' part in all this as well, because I'm pretty sure they handled they deserve the share of that blame, and they basically got none of it because they got immunity for talking. So,
yeah, it's, I don't know. It's a weird situation. Like, baseball just in general is in a really weird situation right now that I just am not sure what's going to happen. And I'm just not like, it's one of those things. It's kind of so bad where people are just, it's gotten so bad that people don't care. Like, they're just like, you know what, that's just what baseball is at this point, you know. And people just kind of attribute it to being a shit sport, so shit things happen in shit sports, and that kind of is sad to me that baseball is getting that rap, because I've loved and I still love baseball. It may not be my favorite sport anymore, but things like this just continue to kind of hurt it. The big scandalous shit that is happening, and then people are just like, eh. Like, in the league, and then fans are just like, eh.
Yeah, it's... I feel like they have the worst owners in all the major American sports. I think the owners in other sports are at least willing to change the sport a little bit, willing to push things forward. And it just seems like baseball owners are the worst when it comes to trying to scrape for as much money as they can and keeping things the way they are. And it's they're not great. The White Sox hired Tony La Russa. I poorly transitioned into that, but apparently this was something that was driven by Jerry Reinsdorf, their owner. Not so much the rest of the team, because it seems like the rest of the front office was pretty divided, and some of them were very unhappy with this hire. Tony La Russa has been around for a long time, since before he's been managing baseball since before I was watching baseball, just before I was born, really. So, but yeah, I think he maybe gets an unfair rap as just being an older guy for maybe not being a manager that subscribes to the modern analytical approach. But I don't know. I don't know how much of that is true and how much of that was skewed by his portrayal in Moneyball. This caught some people in the White Sox organization off guard, including the marketing people who put out a nice little graphic welcoming Tony La Russa, but it included AJ Hinch's signature as a part of the graphic, because he was a candidate for that position at the time as well. So, that's an organization that isn't quite in lockstep right now, and it seems like this particular coaching change was brought about by directly by ownership. So it's never a good sign when ownership meddles with sporting decisions. They should just cut the checks and let the people you hire to manage the sports side of the team do that. If you start interfering, then that completely wrecks things for everybody.
So, of all people, right? And I'm gonna have to look around more, right? I think my favorite owner of any sports franchise might be Mark Cuban, right? Because all the things he is hated for is just kind of his own personal like. Idiocy or kind of assholishness, but
he very much puts himself, like, he's very vocal, he's outspoken, so mm-hmm. that can
but he definitely but... he's definitely outspoken, and he's kind of outspoken the same way like fans are in a sense, but he doesn't necessarily do things other than being a very vocal person, maybe yelling at refs and then other shit. It doesn't seem like he does things that puts his team at detriment operation.
He's had other scandals involved under his watch, sexual mm-hmm. harassment scandals and all that. But and I don't mean to necessarily sweep that under the rug, but you are talking about affecting the basketball side. And he's actually spoken out in the past, and so, like, I've looked into this a lot just because, the Kings are the example of a team where they got a new owner 7 years ago, and for the first couple of years, he stuck his fingers into everything. And it became really difficult to work with him because of that. And Mark Cuban actually came out and said, when I first bought the Mavs, I did the same thing. And he's warned new owners, incoming owners, that there's obviously you bought this brand new shiny toy of a basketball team to play with, or a sports team to play with, and so now you want to come in and change everything and make it look like how you want. You want to come in and play football manager with it, and change everything up to how you want it, because you want to build it in your image. And you have to resist the urge to do that, because that just makes you're not an expert on this. There's people that have been working in the league for 5 to 10 years that are experts at managing teams, and you went through the trouble of hiring some of them to do that for you. So let them do the thing that you're paying them for. And also it just, you know, they have processes for making decisions, and if you circumvent the processes for that, then you just fuck things up for everybody. On top of that, like there's a certain amount of role power you have from being an owner. So if you present an idea, everybody is all of a sudden compelled to agree with you because you are the most powerful person in the organization. Mm-hmm. So it is really important for you to not wield that accidentally, and take a step back and let the people that you've hired to manage. So it's, you know, it's not great when you see an owner like Jerry Reinsdorf come in and, stick his fingers in the team and, bring in a new manager that the front office seems to be very divided on. That should be a hire made by the front office, not a hire made, even if the owner gets final approval, that's fine. But it can't be a decision made by the ownership group. So it's, that could get nasty there. And the rest of the league is potentially getting nasty as well. We've had one free agent signing so far. Pitcher Robbie Ray signed a 1-year, $8 million deal with the Blue Jays, but that's less than what he was making last year. It's kind of a bad sign. We've got two good relief pitchers, Brad Hand and Darren O'Day, who have had their options declined. I would say they're very small options for how good of pitchers they were. Brad Hand is somebody who did a fantastic job for Cleveland over the last couple of years, and that was not enough for them to accept his 1-year, $10 million option. Relief pitcher Darren O'Day for the Braves, who made it all the way to the National League Championship Series this year. He's had a 1.21 ERA over the last 2 years, and that's not good enough for a $3.5 million option. So it seems like teams are going to be really cheap. It really seems like, the last couple of years of free agency, with teams being cheap, but even worse now that teams are going to be losing a bunch of money from COVID. So the free agent market is going to be bad, even though that doesn't necessarily mean that no free agents are going to get signed. But it just seems like the market is going to be depressed, which is not a good sign 1 year before the collective bargaining agreement ends. I don't think there's any way that the Players Association is not pissed about this, and that the two sides are going to be able to work out a deal to figure out how to play baseball past the current collective bargaining agreement without some sort of major work stoppage. There's going to be a major strike, and I think it'll take a while for them to settle it. I know we're kind of in the age of short seasons due to COVID, but I think we're, after the 2021 season, we are going to see a major work stoppage for Major League Baseball.
Yeah. No, it's coming. It's been coming. We've been talking about, like, baseball and its money for the last two seasons, yeah. Including this
since
one.
Since the show started.
Yeah, so, like, baseball has been being weird with its money and playing players. I think there was the one season where we were literally sitting here and there were amazing players sitting in free agency and nobody literally nobody was talking to them or giving them offers until like the last couple of days, where these guys who really wanted to play but were waiting for good offers, you know, we're sitting there doing that. And it's shady, and there's like, there was definitely something going on, and there's like definitely some kind of weird collusion. It had so much sense of like collusion written all over it, of like the teams all together deciding to not go to these multi-million dollar players and offer them deals so that they could take deals for less, because they were going to offer them deals at the last minute. So it was very weird.
Something is going to have to change with the structure of baseball contracts in general, because they've got this weird, like, they've got this weird setup where like you can't get paid for like until you're 26 or 27 or 28, and teams will try to delay that as much as possible, to the point where like the first time you hit free agency, there's a good chance you're in your early 30s, by the time you hit your first free agency, you're almost considered a little bit too old to give a massive contract to. So like that already has a huge effect on how much players earn, and it just seems like there's only a couple players that can get massive contracts, but when they do, they get huge, gigantic contracts for like 10 years. Like Mookie Betts, you know, his 13-year contract, and you know, Mike Trout and Bryce Harper and their massive contracts. And it's like, I feel like the NBA has struck like a nice happy medium where I don't think you can sign for more than five. Like the team gets control for the first 9 years or so if they want it, but if they get that control, they have to pay you a shit ton of money for exercising that control. Like they have to pay you max contract money, you have to, at least if you have a restricted free agent, you have to match at least the contracts that everybody else offers that same player if you're going to keep them. So at least there's kind of an auction aspect to it that helps the players get paid even early on. And then since a lot of the guys when they're coming out of college are 19, that means after, you know, it means they hit their first like major free agency in when they're kind of in their right when they're hitting the prime of their careers, and so that lets them get, you know, a massive contract on top of that, and the longest contracts you can sign are like 4-year contracts or so. So teams aren't shy about giving those contracts out because they know it's not going to hamstring them forever. There needs to be a change. Like you can't have like one group of players making barely anything and then another group of, and then like a handful of players making $30 million a year for the next 10 years. Like there has to be like some sort of middle ground. There has to be some sort of, there's no salary floor right now. I think that's going to be a big thing that the players are going to want to negotiate, because you got some teams going out there paying $200 million a year on players and other teams going out and paying 40. So it's something is going to have to change, and I think whatever changes is going to have a major effect on the competitive balance in baseball in general. So massive wait and see for us.
Yeah, because I don't know how to feel about it, because it's just a really weird situation, because I feel like, With everything you said, right, the change is coming and the change is there, but I also feel like the writing is just getting there, where there just needs to be, and you know, not just money, but just kind of a holistic change in the landscape of baseball, because I feel like even if a stoppage happens, no one's gonna notice except for the people in that room. Baseball is just losing market share, and it could be part of the reason why ownership is doing this, because they want to keep money in their pockets because they know they're losing it everywhere else. But it's that sense of like, you're so scared to spend money that you're just going to continue to not make money, right?
Yeah.
And that's
a very backwards way of handling the problem.
Yeah. So, like you said, it's a wait and see, and we're going to see what happens. We're going to kind of keep our eyes kind of on baseball as a whole, just to see where the road it goes down is kind of the thing from here, right? Is the road baseball decides to go down, with a continued eye on COVID and a, you know, post COVID, where they come back to, what they do, what the new TV deals will look like, if they're able to keep players and stuff like that, you know, and that's one of the other things, right, is to stop losing talent to other sports, which is what was a big thing that we were talking about.
I remember back when I said Kyler Murray should play baseball because he's not going to get a concussion playing baseball, but you know, here he is lighting the NFL on fire, and yeah. He made the right decision there. He proved me wrong.
I mean, like, four or five of, like, the last, like, big quarterback prospects have also been baseball prospects, right?
Yeah.
Like, Kyler Murray was a big baseball-football prospect. I think Patrick Mahomes was a big baseball-football prospect, if I remember correctly. Russell Wilson was also a big name as a baseball-football prospect. And
I don't know if they were potential first round picks like Kyler Murray was, but I think I know for sure Russell Wilson was drafted.
I think Russell Wilson was an early first round, not top of first round, but I think he was early first round. But yeah, they all kind of very specifically took to the more dangerous sport in being very athletic guys that I think we're still in that realm of like, hey, if you're an athletic guy throwing the ball, you're going to get injured and your career is going to be over. And they've all flourished really well.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still kind of keeping an eye on Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes, but I mean, you know, look at Patrick Mahomes. He's already done a lot of great things in his time. So, I mean, so has Russell Wilson, right? Like, they're both Super Bowl quarterbacks and, like, they made the right choice, like, because they Patrick Mahomes probably a little bit more than Russell Wilson has, you know, they both have these big stars on their back because they chose to play football over the baseball, and Kyler Murray is kind of going down that same path. He's you know, shining so much more as a football player because that's just where the eyes are, you know.
He's going to carry my team to a fantasy football championship this year. I have nobody else on this team. Everybody else is going to get injured, but Kyler Murray is going to carry me. It's just that good.
Yeah, between Patrick Mahomes and the Seahawks wide receiving core, I'm doing pretty well. Yeah. All right, let's talk a little bit about basketball. There's not much for us to talk about basketball right now because we're gonna have a big off season preview coming up where we kind of go over a lot of the details of the off season. But one of the things that was still kind of looming when we did that episode was the start date of the basketball season, of the upcoming basketball season, which would put a lot of sway on what happened in the offseason, which was a thing that we talked about. So kind of the short of it was the players wanted a little bit more time, or kind of the talk was going that a majority of the players wanted a little bit more time before the season started back up, whereas the owners wanted a shorter period of turnaround. They were eyeing a December 2nd turnaround.
22nd.
It's December 22nd turnaround for the restart of the NBA season because, like JVZ noted, they really want to hit those Christmas Day games and get more games into the regular season schedule. Those were the big things, right? Hit the big TV contracts because, like you said, Christmas is kind of basketball's thing. It is their thing solely to have, so they want to make sure they hit that. That's where they're going to get a lot of majority of their eyes, and I think they still kind of have a majority of the eyes just coming off of the season for most sports.
Let's quantify this because they said or they estimate that they can make roughly $500 million to $1 billion a year, or not a year, if they play December 22nd versus Martin Luther King Day, that extra period, including all the revenue that they would make from the Christmas Day lineup, would get them an extra $500 million to $1 billion this year. Mm-hmm. So keep in mind, half of that goes to the players. So I think that ended up being probably the deciding factor. They probably showed the players, like, okay, this is what you're going to make this year if you guys insist on starting in January, and this is what it, and I know it's soon, but this is what you're going to get if you start now. And also consider the fact that I think, as I said before, like 26 of the teams have not played since the end of October. Since the end of September. So they've had some time off already. They're going to have until December 1st is when training camp starts. So that's like 3 weeks from now. So there's still going to be a little bit of time to prepare. And so, like, the only teams that are necessarily tired are the ones that went deep into the playoffs, like the Lakers and the Heat. Everybody else, including a bunch of teams that have, that did not get invited to the bubble, like some of them haven't played for even longer. A team like the Warriors has not played since March. Basically, all the teams that are at the top of the draft have not played since March. And they'll have, exciting young rookie players that people are going to want to see from the draft on the 18th. So, so there's no reason to hold those people back just because the Lakers are tired. I think it's a weird mix of interests that had to be sorted out throughout the league, but they have tentative agreement now on the December 22nd start date. They're going to do a 72-game schedule, which is enough to satisfy all their TV deals. The goal is to complete the season before the Olympics. So hopefully they have a little bit of padding in there. I think they're canceling the All-Star game because normally that's a big event to gather a bunch of people together in one spot, which is not something you can do during COVID anymore. So I think that gives them a little bit of wiggle room in the schedule, and maybe they can use that week to make up a couple games here and there if games have to get postponed due to COVID. So, baseball found a way to get a 60-game season to work, even despite all the outbreaks throughout the year. So I think the NBA is seeing that, the bubble was kind of the gold standard. And to be fair, there's the NHL bubble and the NWSL bubble as well, and the MLS bubble, and all those were successful, but you don't necessarily need a bubble to complete a season, and they don't have to get everything perfect. They just have to they just have to get it done, and if they get it done, then they get money, and all that matters is the money. But as with the Major League Baseball, with the Toronto Blue Jays struggling to find a home because Canada isn't allowing Americans to just travel to Canada willy-nilly, because things are even worse than they were back then when it comes to COVID in America. So the Raptors have the exact same problem. So they got to find a home inside the United States for a season, and it's looking like Nashville might be a potential home. Kansas City was also thrown around.
Just on the Raptors thing, like, I don't know why they don't just either play in like Detroit or Michigan and then use one of the colleges.
I think that's been talked about as well. At least that would be close to where they currently are now.
And they'd probably have, a very similar fandom in the close proximity to those places other than Detroit, right? Like, obviously, if they played in Detroit, they're going to end up with a lot of Detroit fans. But if you play in, like, somewhere else in Michigan, you could probably just split the fandom of people who are close enough to that border and decide that they're Raptors fans.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You don't have to worry about fans because you're not allowing fans into the games. So this isn't.
It's going to come up. They're going to talk about it.
Yeah. But it's not quite the same situation as before when, like, during Hurricane Katrina, they had to move the New Orleans Hornets to Oklahoma City for a while. But it does kind of bring up the same thing where, like, Oklahoma City showed that they can support an NBA team during that period. And I think the league was very grateful to them for that. And eventually when the Seattle Supersonics came up for sale, they allowed that team to be sold, and then they allowed that team to be moved to the city of Oklahoma City because Oklahoma City had already proven that they can support an NBA team. Mm-hmm. So this is a good opportunity for a potential NBA market to show that they can support a team. A place like Kansas City, which I've known for years, is like they've got like a brand spanking new arena, not brand new, but like fairly new, and that meets like all the NBA requirements. So they can show the NBA that like they can support a team there, or Nashville, although there's already a team in Memphis, so maybe not Nashville, there's always the potential for the NBA bringing back the Seattle Supersonics. So Seattle always comes up as a potential expansion team, but I don't know, people are really weird about having an odd number of teams in the league, even though the NBA has had an odd number of teams for a long time. So if you want to add two teams at once, then it's like add Seattle and then maybe one other team somewhere in the middle of the country. That's thinking way down the line, but I think owners are reluctant to make that kind of change because that means splitting up their pot into 32 pieces instead of 30. If a city can show that they can support the team very well, then they'd be less reluctant to do that. Obviously, they're not going to get the Raptors permanently because there's no way Toronto's letting go of that team. It might be a good, strong case for an expansion team. Those are just some of the weird logistics that have to get worked out before training camp starts in December. As we mentioned, we got the draft November 18th. Right now it's just tentative deals, so they're still working out details when it comes to like free agency and how to handle, when do free agents sign, when can teams start trading players. Teams are still going around and hiring coaches and stuff, so that's at least that part of the offseason is not dead right now. But once they announce that trades and stuff can happen and free agency and what the salary cap is going to be and all that, then this is going to kick off. And so we've got that preview episode coming next week for you guys. Those of you who are patrons have already received that episode. So enjoy that. For the rest of you, it'll air next week. We're looking forward to it. Another thing I'm looking forward to is NBA 2K21. At the very least, the PS5 and the Xbox Series X version. I don't know which Xbox that is, but I presume the newest one. Yeah. Hopefully, eventually PC as well will get an update that will allow you to play the WNBA in career mode, which is basically the only way I play the game anyways, is to build up an individual player and go through their career. try to train and up their stats and stuff. And so now you can do that with a WNBA career, which you couldn't before. And so I'm pretty excited about that.
There's definitely I've been starting to follow the NBA kind of 2K just sphere. And
it really is like its own ecosystem.
Yeah, because there are people who are just really into this and create a lot of content and stuff around the kind of NBA 2K like game and game modes and different things. And it's been a thing that's been talked about for a while with a lot of stuff. And a lot of the feature things that weren't in this most current like iteration of the game because. I guess they were holding back for new gen, and now all of these list of things that are going to get added to the game when the new gen consoles come out, but for the new gen consoles, which has been making a lot of people go, well, what about PC? Like, does PC gonna get this like massive update that is going to everything else? So it's definitely very interesting how 2K handles a lot of these things. They have been getting a lot of guff for a lot of things they've been doing this year in the game, but as far as I know, that's kind of the cycle of how the 2K games go. Is the 2K game comes out, there's a bunch of whatever, they get a lot of guff for it, they fix some things, and a lot of things just stay the same. So, but this thing is definitely interesting. It's been something people have been asking for. I think either last year or the year before was kind of one of the first big initiations of having the WNBA and the license for the WNBA.
Yeah, just even being able to play as those players at all. In the basic mode.
So this kind of continued push is really good, because I was talking to people about this the other day and kind of the 2K FIFA like these sports franchises, because a lot of the times they know their fandom, right? The sports franchise games knows their fandom relatively really well, and they market really well to their fandom, from the style of music that's in the games to the style of the games and all these things, because a lot of times they're usually marketing to black males and college age males, right? And that's kind of been the majority of their market for a really long time. But now they're kind of expanding that to more things, and I'm really liking it, because it's kind of bringing me back into sports games. Because I will say, when I was of that age of a kind of college age black male, that's really when I was into sports games, and then I kind of fell out of favor with it. But this like new fuller kind of game experience they're starting to give you again is really nice.
Sports related video games are probably the best way to learn about how a sport works. And not just learn about that, but like, you know, the most recent version of the game is probably the best way to learn about the different players, which is kind of why I'm upset that like there aren't PC versions of like the Major League Baseball and NHL games.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if I played those, then I would be able to do a better job on this show talking about those sports, because I don't spend as much time watching it. It takes, it's one thing to tune into a game and just leave it off on the side playing while you're doing something else, but it's another thing to actually engage with it and learn which players wrecking your shit and which players you need to watch out for and all that, and so you learn a lot more about that. And so having gone back into watching the WNBA the last couple of years, like I'm really excited to be able to play as them, and not just play as them, but play as a player entering the league and having to navigate that that landscape, and having a story mode that goes along with it as well. Actually, I don't know if this is going to include a story mode, but usually these
don't think so. At least they haven't announced one yet.
They at least 2K on the basketball side tends to they dress up, at least on the men's side, the my player mode with
bad story.
It's okay. The storylines are okay.
It's bad. They're always bad. Like, all of them have been bad. Like, even on the Madden one, Madden still does it too, where they give you this, like, weird sports movie. And it's just bad, man. Like, one of my favorites, going back, I think, was one of the EA franchises. And it literally just was you as a player, right? You signed an agent in Madden, and you kind of went and you got different endorsements. Like, kind of what it does after you go through the story mode in 2K is what I like. Is like, I want more of that. Like, getting the endorsements, trying to get fans and all that kind of stuff, and like kind of molding the story around that as opposed to anything else. And like, one of the other features I miss in these like ongoing sports franchises, which was more of an EA thing and I wish would kind of come back, was when you had the like, when EA had both the college and NFL contract, you could have a player start in college, and you could then draft them literally from one game to the next game and keep playing. Oh, man, that was great. Yeah, that was,
you could export the entire NCAA lineup into as your draft class for Madden, and that was cool.
Yeah,
but yeah, but no college players got paid for that. So
yeah, that's another aspect. Look, it was a cool thing. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
But no, this is more inclusive stuff. I know FIFA has had some of the, because this article states it, and it reminded me, FIFA has had some of like the national teams for different countries. For female sports. And some other sports have kind of played around with the idea of having female inclusion in their things. So more of it is always good, and then it's just having people use these modes to show the developers that they want them.
Yeah, every year I look at the new version of the game, because I always have the one the year before, and I look at it and I say, there's not enough in here for me to buy this new game.
Yeah.
And then sometime around like April or so, I get a ping from you telling me that the game is on like a steep discount for like $5. So then I end up buying it then. But I feel like this is at least for me, is a, like, it's a feature that I want enough that I will buy 2K20 probably a little bit earlier than I normally do.
21.
I won't wait until this, I might buy it at like $20 instead of waiting until it's five. Or like as soon as this feature comes out, because I think it's supposed to be like whenever the next gen consoles come out, that's when it's going to launch.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. Put it out for PC too, because
my PC they definitely, like I think they definitely will. Like they like NBA, the NBA 2K franchise, and I think Madden, have been pretty good on keeping up with their PC fandom. Some of the other sports franchises, not so much. But the NBA 2K one and Madden have been pretty well versed in doing that. So hopefully it continues with this kind of new update to NBA 2K21. So we'll see.
Hibbity Bibbert in chat mentions that MLB The Show is no longer going to be a PlayStation exclusive, so hopefully we see some sort of MLB game on PC. That would be great. Anything. I just want anything on PC. And somebody needs to make a boxing game, because we haven't had one since the PS3. Yeah. So.
And none of the UFC games are on PC. So
yeah, well, I don't really care for those. So
the last one I heard was pretty good, but
I like, it's, I'm sure on consoles, great, but it's like, so. The reason why we don't have a boxing game is because they took all those people that worked on Fight Night and moved them over to the UFC games, and so like I,
yeah, Yeah, that's weird. We need to add a story for next week about some boxing stuff, because there's been some goings on in the boxing sphere. But that's how you know we're at the end of the show, because we're discussing next week. So thank you for joining us on this episode of Sports Odds and Ends. You know what to do. Follow us on Twitter. I'm at King Cash. JVZ is at JVZ. You can follow the show at Sports Odds Ends. You can check out the website, sportsoddsandends.com, for all the show notes and things that we talked about on this show and past shows as well. And if you are feeling gracious and would like to donate just a little bit to us, head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/sportsoddsandends. And you can donate to us and just kind of help the show keep going a little bit. Give us that good push to keep doing the things that we're doing. But thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us. And make sure you go read some of the articles we talked about today, because there's some really good stuff in some of them, especially that political one, especially in this current season of the political sphere. It's definitely something worth checking out if you're a sports fan. So until next time, thank you for joining us. Thank you for being here. And have a good sports season.